WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
If you've ever watched Second City TV, there's Count Floyd, and he does a very funny parody of all the washed-up, third-rate hosts of horror movie shows on local TV, which, with me, is the genuine article, the real thing, the father of the genre, the man that every city tried to copy and usually failed. Philadelphians knew him as Roland, and he used to host Shock Theater in Philadelphia. New Yorkers knew him as Zachary. As Roland or Zachary, he was the crazy ghoul who introduced and interrupted hundreds of vampire, mummy, zombie, and body snatcher films I used to watch regularly in New York. He not only introduced the film, but he would do cutaways where he would mock the action of the film or mock the whole genre. So, like when the zombie was about to grab the beautiful woman, the station would cut briefly to Zachary, who would be screaming and waving his arms as if he was the one that was in jeopardy. And we would sit through even the worst of the zombie films to see what crazy antics Zachary had prepared for the cutaways. You may remember his novelty hit record, Dinner with Drac, and in New York in 1968, he began an 11-year period as a rock DJ, first on WNEW-FM, then on WPLJ in New Jersey. John Zachary will be appearing in Philadelphia this Sunday and then Monday for a Halloween program with the Philly Pops with Peter Nero, and he'll be performing The Raven, and the Sunday show will be at 3 in the afternoon, the Monday show at 8. John Zachary, it is such a great treat for me to meet you.
It's terrific. I feel absolutely historic here. All the things you said and being in this neighborhood here, this is amazing.
How did you develop the persona?
Well, that's a pretty heavy name for it. Very serious there, persona. Well, I don't know. I know how I got the job. There used to be a show called Action in the Afternoon here in Philadelphia. In fact, it was on the whole East Coast on the CBS network. And it was a soap opera with horses and cowboys. And it was live every day, live soap opera, really. It'd be kind of neat if it was going on now. But now we have all these sexy ones coming out of New York and Hollywood. Ooh, boy. You know, Search for Tomorrow, all that stuff. Anyway, it was every day, a half hour, cowboys, you know, shooting off guns and riding horses around behind WCAU up there. Now there's nothing but buildings back there now. It's all been built up. But we had a little town built there. And you'd come riding into town on Monday, and by Friday you either were dead or married or put in jail or hung or run out of town. And the next week someone else would come to town and disturb things for a while. And one week I came to town as an undertaker who specialized in making caskets. Someone had this idea that there were people who went around the West making a year's supply of caskets for this town and then go on to another town and make... I can't believe that, but anyway, I did it in this show. And about 2 years after that, when the horror movies were first released to be seen on TV, you know, it was a big thing. They call it shock theater, and some guys in California who knew how to do that bought up films and sold them as a package. And there were, I don't know, half a dozen at least horror hosts that sprung up almost immediately there at that time to help out the films, because some of them weren't very famous. The Dracula and Frankenstein films were in there, but then there were a lot of lesser ones that need a little help. I guess help, I don't know. And I always have to tell people I never saw them when I was a kid. I wasn't allowed to. You know, had a little booklet come to the house and said, this is for children, this is not for children, this is for grown-ups, you know, like much like the rating systems today. But I had parents who went by that book, so I spent a lot of lonely Saturday afternoons.
So how'd you get your costume and your makeup?
Well, that came out of the cowboy thing. The black suit I wore is an undertaker suit. It's an old, the one I have, I still have it. It was from that era, you know, in the 90s and 80s and 90s. And a little neck piece and all that, I guess. I think I wore that also, but I know the black coat I wore. And the makeup, I remember there's still a man out at WCAU, Chuck Wells, who was in charge of makeup and scenery. And we sat down one day and they said, well, now, what if she looked like? Looked like Dracula. Well, nobody could remember what Dracula looked like, and they had no stills around. So we thought, well, he slicked his hair back. So we slicked the hair back and parted in the middle. But he doesn't part his in the middle, or didn't. And we found out later. And then just very accentuated these cheekbones like a large V, sort of like shadows, but laid on very heavy, almost like kabuki, almost. I thought of that afterwards, and dark around the eyes and the side of my nose, you know, and even some dark coming out of my nose. Someone said, what's that coming out of your nose? I said, that's atmosphere. I put shoe polish. It's a great trick if you puck up your lips and touch them with a little not quite soggy, white shoe polish, you know, just touch them. Then when you open your mouth, it looks like cracks, you know. It looks wonderful, the lower lip, especially the lower lip. And that's mostly what I did. And I think I put a little black atmosphere in my ears, too. And then I had an experience. I was at the WCAU the first time in all those years. And I had a kinescope that was done here. And, they got all excited because some of the original people are still out working out there. And they said, oh, my gosh. And I looked at it. I couldn't believe it, the change of way I do it. And because I do this once in a while still. I did the movies in New York, and then occasionally people ask me to do something again, get dressed up. And I did the 3D movie. Did you see 3D when it came to TV about 2 months ago?
Missed it.
Oh, dear. Well, you saved yourself a violent headache. Wearing those 3D glasses and looking at a television tube, would you be reaching for Tylenol no matter what the danger was? You know? Really.
The parting of your hair in the middle, a very simple thing, was so dramatic. When I never saw someone with hair parted in the middle if they were a man without thinking of you for years and years.
Well, the funny part is I'm getting recognized on the street now in New York, and I realize what it is. The wind blows. There it is. Isn't that wonderful? Here, I'll hold it up to the microphone, folks. You can see what she's talking about. And, you see those wonderful lips of the cracks. The wind sometimes blows my hair apart in the middle. I didn't used to do that. Last haircut I had somewhere in there. And people suddenly recognized me in the street. I had a handsome cab driver, a little, nice little girl. I was riding my bike to the dentist the other day, and I waited for the red light, and a girl came up and said, aren't you Zachary? And I was really taken aback because people don't recognize me in the street with all that stuff on my face, you know. But she saw something, and I had been on TV about 2 weeks before that, and everybody got excited that remembered from the early days when they were kids, you know.
Can you describe some of the basic props that you worked with all the time?
Oh, sure. Well, we started out, you know, making fun. It seemed like the thing to do in the intermissions where the commercials were to having watched the movie ahead of time. And there was always an experiment going on, you know. Oh, boy, somebody was having their blood removed to inject it into an ape. Arlene Francis, as a matter of fact, she had that done to her in the Murders of the Rue Morgue, her first movie. And she told me all she did was moan, and then they took all her blood and she died, and they dropped her body in the River Seine. And they cut away to me, and I caught it. I got a dummy, you know. And she saw that, and she thought that was wonderful. she said she used to go by her son's room. Her son was a friend of, the book, Bennett Cerf, this boy, and they used to hang out together and watch these movies. She says, you stop watching that. She didn't want to watch horror movies. And he kept saying, but Mother, it's funny. It's funny. Watch it. Finally, she watched it. And I think she said she saw her own thing. But when she made that movie, she was so cute about it. She said that was the first movie as a young girl she ever made. And she was playing this streetwalker who was kidnapped, and she moaned and moaned and moaned. And they drained her blood out to put it in this ape to make him live forever. And then she died, and that was it. And when the publicity came out, they had pictures of her, you know, in these big posters, and her dress torn and looking very ravished and all, and a little bit too sexy. Had nothing to do with the movie. And her father was a very strict man. Called her and said, you come back out of that place right now. Come back home immediately. She said that her father was outraged that she was in a movie where she had her dress torn, you know. Oh, dear. Anyway, we always tried to imitate the movie to the extent of the experiments in the case of that, the drawing blood and all. I would do some outrageous thing. And the first thing we ever used was a piece of liver. Somebody was doing a heart transplant or something in the movie, and we said, well, that's not the way you do it. And we had a piece of liver, a rather large one, lying on my table in front of me. And the table was a big box, and inside my wife lived under there, and I had to lift the lid and talk to her, get in there and berate her play cards with her, whatever. But it was also the working area. And so we cut a little hole underneath this liver and had a little stick that I could work with my foot, and I could poke it up and down with my foot and make it look like the heart was beating. Occasionally the stick would come up right past the liver and look a little like it shouldn't be there, you know. But people loved that anyway. And from that we went to using, it seemed like cauliflower looked maybe like brains, and that was always fun, you know, to...
You'd bat it around.
Sure. And then occasionally if I was hungry, I'd break off a little piece and eat it. But the suggestion was all, you know, it was the power of suggestion. But the greatest fun I think we had was I was having lunch one day up at the Chestnut Hill Diner in Philadelphia. No longer exists. Sad, sad. And I saw them dishing out some Jell-O, and it was very hard and rubbery. And I said to Ed White, the guy who was producing the show, I said, why don't we make a big bunch of Jell-O and see what that looks like? So we both made a big bucket of Jell-O and carried it in and turned upside down like a big mold, you know, let it sit there. And because it was so big and bulky, about 4 inches high and 6 inches deep or more and 12 wide, as it sat there, it kind of on its own just kind of split right in front of the camera, and it looked awful. It looked like some horrible wound that you could never heal. Well, we played around now. Then we decided, well, should have a skin around it. I'm sure this must be fascinating for people who are sitting at home to hear this. But we put a piece, large handkerchief, say, size thing of cheesecloth, and put the jello in the middle, and then tied the four ends tightly, and then rolled the knot over so the knot was on the bottom, and that gave it a kind of a skin. You could slap it, and it would wobble, and it wouldn't break apart. And you could hide things in there ahead of time. And so when you went to open it up, if I just picked up this little piece of cheesecloth with my hand, in my one hand, and then cut it with another right in front of the camera close up, it just looked like something awful was happening, but it was really only a piece of jello. And we call that the great giant amoeba from which we all descended, you know. You can talk about the biblical people or Darwin, but we know the real answer. It's the big amoeba.
What are some of the best and some of the worst horror films you've had the pleasure of doing?
Oh, well, the best ones, the one I like, the old black and white one, and I really know more about them than I do in the modern ones, which are kind of violent, because they always left it to your imagination. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it was better when I left it to your imagination. But they really did. It was usually if Dracula bent over to bite someone, his head usually disappeared out of camera, and you knew what he was doing down there, but you didn't see it. Then the hammer came along, and blood came out of his teeth and all that, you know. And you hammer the stake in while he got blood on his face from the after splatter, you know. But the one I like most of those old ones was The Son of Frankenstein. It seemed to me that Bela Lugosi as a shepherd was wonderful, and Basil Rathbone, I think, was the son. And then Frankenstein was still being played by Boris Karloff, and Lionel Atwill was still the inspector. No, he was the policeman. He was a police captain or something, you know, with a wooden arm. Remember, he used to flip his arm up and then he put darts in his arm. He had a whole handful of darts, and he put the ones he wasn't going to use, just stick them in his arm and throw one at a time. And the worst ones, I know the worst ones, you know, like the Killer Tomatoes or something like that. What was that called? What was the killer?
The Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, I think.
That was outrageously funny. But a friend of mine was in The Blob that was made here. Remember The Blob?
Sure.
Yeah, the first one by Steve McQueen was made out here in a summertime place. Pennsylvania Academy of Arts, I think it was, had a summer college out in Chester Springs. And a little religious group made themselves some money once by making The Blob. But I'm not bringing it up as a thing. I'm just trying to think the worst. Some of the old black and whites were just bad because they were so quickly written, and poor Lon Chaney Jr. got stuck in a lot of them.
I remember endless zombie movies. There are a few really wonderful zombie films, but some of them, like Abbott and Costello Meet the Zombies, and then fourth and fifth, tenth, twelfth generation zombie movies.
Yeah.
What would you think about when you would be watching, like, or say, a really bad zombie film, figuring out what you'd do?
Well, it used to discourage me because sometimes there just was no place to have any fun somehow. It was really depressing if we knew what the next film was, and the films were scheduled in advance so they could get them out to the guides and all that, newspapers. So whatever the film was for next week, that was the one we had to use. And sometimes it just seemed you just couldn't get in. I was describing it before we went on the air how when we were doing that, the film was always running. And if I wanted to answer somebody back and who made a slightly dumb statement in the movie, and they wanted to cut over to me sitting in a chair that looked like the movie, I had just enough time, whoever else was answering the movie, within the movie, the other actor, to cut him out. But the film was still running, and maybe it was only 3 seconds, maybe it was 6 seconds, maybe it was a minute. And had a lot of fun, you know, you could throw the whole movie in reverse by whatever you said and make it come out very funny if it worked. And then when I was finished talking, the film said, if we were lucky, it would go back to the original person, and he'd say, oh, that's the answer, hey? Oh, okay. But often it didn't quite work that way because we didn't have too much time to rehearse it all. But we did study them, and the problem, of course, was that it was on film. Now, if it's on tape, you can cut it up and do anything you want to. But on film, if anybody's familiar with film, the voice track is so many frames ahead of the picture, and you just can't willy-nilly cut in, or you cut out another speech that you didn't want to cut out. So it was fun, but it took a lot of study, and sometimes it just didn't work. You just couldn't have any fun. It was very frustrating.
I was just going to reintroduce you. John Zacherle, known to many Philadelphians as Roland, is my guest. And next Sunday and Monday, he'll be performing with the Philly Pops for their Halloween show.
I've been running around the house quoting the raven, you know, nevermore, nevermore, quoth the raven, nevermore. And there's music to it, too. It's going to be great.
Are you going to do it with your Zachary laughing at?
Yeah, with the costume. Oh, yes, you bet, you bet, you bet. And there's about five poems. The whole thing's been scored by someone in St. Louis, I think, and I've got it here. Not that I can show you, but I mean, there it is, look at that. And the music will be going on as I read and all that stuff, and leading up to the final poem, which is The Raven. It's a pretty great old poem, really, and the Philly Pops, it's going to be great. If I don't die right there, I'll just say, whoa, the first piece of music behind me, I may fall over.
When you were on TV, did you get a lot of response from parents who felt that that it was really an evil influence to have the horror films and you
in the beginning,
children?
Yes, in the beginning, especially here in Philadelphia. I think it was probably 1958 or so when those things were released for TV. And in Philadelphia, they were a little nervous, so they put them on late at night on Mondays and Tuesdays, thinking that that would be out of the way and be no problem. And the story we got, whether it was true or not, it must have had some, there must have been some really basic origin from what I heard at the time, that they changed it to Friday and Saturday because school teachers were complaining that kids were falling asleep in school on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, staying up anyway when they were supposed to have been in bed like good little children. I don't know when all when little good little children turned into bad little children, but all those old habits of going to bed early are long gone, I think. Doing your homework and going to bed and all and getting up in the morning. Anyway, they moved it till Friday and Saturday, and so they and finally gave up. And when I got to New York, it was still late at night, though. When I got to New York, they had already been showing the films at the ABC station for a year before I got there. And I did them late at night also at Channel 7 up there. Then when I went to Channel 9 the next year, WR station, I found that they were showing in the afternoon, just as the big movie, the million-dollar movie. It was King Kong week. They'd show King Kong all week long, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They didn't really care whether anybody was scared or anything. By that time, you know, it was accepted. Now you can see them at any time of day or night, really. But it was a great, great era to live through, I must say, especially since I'd never seen any of the films. They were all new to me. I'd never seen them in my life.
Do you think you'd be able to...
Did you go to the movies when you were a kid? I mean, were you allowed to go and see whatever you wanted?
Well, I was probably about 10 when I started going, or 9 when I started going to the movies myself, as long as it was one bus away, no more than that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't considered a good thing to go see horror films. But it was perfectly fun to watch them on TV.
That's strange.
You can watch anything on TV. could you do your thing if they were like Hammer films on, like some of the ones where there's not only a lot of blood, but there's like lesbian vampirism and all kinds of crazy things happening?
I suppose so now. Back then, maybe not. I don't know. They were released, I think the original package that I spoke of, the Shock Theater, had the old black and white movies from Hollywood in the 30s, I guess, the films mostly. And the Hammer films came out, and I don't think I ever got occasion to use one of them, but I did see them in movie houses. And, you know, they went beyond. They didn't. They kept it right. They gave you the gore, in other words. That was the first, I guess.
Those are the films that are on Saturdays now, the Hammer films.
Yeah, they must have been the first ones to put gore on the screen. And now, wow, now, gee, if it doesn't splatter all over, why, it's not worth seeing, I guess. A lot of people think that anyway. But I really just shy away from all those special effects. And I don't even like movies that have a lot of mobile crashes in them. I think that's kind of absurd. And it's violence that we don't need. I don't know. I'm not preaching anything, but it just doesn't appeal to me.
When you stopped doing the TV show, you started doing FM rock?
Oh, yeah. Or... Boy, I've had my second childhood already. I'm waiting for my third now. It was wonderful.
Do you see any link between horror films and rock sensibility?
Well, there's always Frank Zappa and what's the other guy's name? Oh, that's terrible. Oh, not Zappa. Come on. The snakes and all. Quick. Alice Cooper, yeah. Alice Cooper. I remember introducing him the first time he came to New York in a very small little town hall it was. You know, town hall in the 40s. And he had his snakes and everything, and he had to make... He had makeup a little like mine, in a way. He had his eyes darkened in, you know, and... look pretty weird, and but he's not really that kind of a person. He was just part of the act, and I don't know whether there's a great connection. I don't think so. I loved the music. I grew up with big band music, And I just had a feeling once I got into the rock and roll, and I got into that through a dancing show that I did in New Jersey for a while. It was like a crazy Dick Clark type show. But I did it in the costume because the kids remembered that kind of flowed from one show to another. And that's how I got into the music. And after that died, about 3 years, I went to WNEW-FM. They had just picked up the music. It's a long-involved story from another station that decided they wanted to change to something else. So they became the progressive rock station in New York. And I got in there right in the beginning. We're going to have an anniversary this week. I got to go back on Thursday night and play in 2 hours of oldies from the mid-60s. It'll be great fun, really. but I don't know the connection with Harai. I don't think this... I don't think anybody really thought of that as they were writing. Can you think of any instances like that where you... Where you
well, there's the Rocky Horror question. Show, but I think yeah. that kind of is besides the point in a lot
yeah.
of ways.
Yeah, that's pretty unique. Yeah.
And someone was telling me about a horror show from Cleveland, I think, that several years ago used to play like early New Wave records with horror films. That sounded like a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a young fellow I met not long ago, he wanted to make one, and he's make a little film, and... For $5,000, he's going to do it. He's
That's
done gonna
be
it.
Very little.
So I volunteered my services to do a kind of a opening to the thing. I don't really know why a film has to have a host at the beginning. But anyway, he's worked it all out, and he hopes it'll be a little crazy thing like Rocky Horror.
Has it changed you a lot to have seen as, you know, hundreds and hundreds, like every horror film probably that was ever made?
Yes, except most of the modern ones I really haven't seen, except unless they pop up on TV or something.
But the early, just, all the classic ones and
oh, yeah,
all the classically
sure.
bad
oh,
ones,
sure.
too. From
oh,
the,
yeah. Oh,
from the
sure.
30s.
And it was. It was. I don't think it's changed me any. I can talk about them, I guess, but it did make me like the whole idea and go out and see everyone that's coming out now, if that means anything. maybe I don't like the price of the theater tickets. I don't know. But I'm sure if I got a hold of somebody, they'd make sure I went to see them. You know, they'd say, hey, you better go get back in it and know what's going on. I don't know what it would be like to host a TV show with some of the new ones that are so awfully gory and what's the word? eloquently gory. They just, I run into special effects people, you know, and they make their living at this, thinking of ways to make a head squash and all that, and and make it look realistic. Who was it? Salvatore? Did you ever see that Salvatore Dali thing where they, I don't know how to say it, did that thing to the eye?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Now, that goes way back. That goes way back. There was a retrospective not long ago on TV about horror and movies and avant-garde filmmaking, and that one was mentioned as one of the early things you could do that nobody had tried before. I mean, really being horrifying. Mm.
Growing up, I used to watch you and know you as Zachary on TV, and the word Zachary always had very horrific connotations to me. It turned out to, you know, just be your name, but in Philadelphia, you didn't use your name. You were known as Roland, and I've been trying to think what's scary or ghoulish about the name Roland.
Well, Ed White, who dreamed up the idea of having a host, there was a comedian playing Philadelphia at that time, and I cannot think of his name, but he had a character that he played called Roland. And he mentioned that to the boss, and one day we went in and sat with the boss, Mr. Vanda, and he sat there with a cigar and leaned back in his chair and expounded on what this show was all about, as it was explained to him. And he says, no, Ed White has this idea of introducing horror movies and all this, blah, 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 blah. And he's got this guy whose name is Roland, and no. Well, he pronounced it that way, and whether no one wanted to, correct him or whether they thought that was a funny way to pronounce it, that's what we left it as, Roland. And it's really where it came from, just this character that some comedian had introduced, and I never saw or heard the character. And it just stuck, Roland. It was kind of a name. When I got to New York, they were concerned that they didn't want to have any problems with the management of WCAU because there is an overlapping area where people from up in Bucks County, for instance, can get New York and Philadelphia. The stations do overlap in the advertising and all that. So they were sitting there. Well, your name's kind of funny. Do you want to? I said, sure, all right, that's all right. It is kind of strange when you say that, that it sounds Zacherle. It's just an old German name, you know, E-R-L-E. It's on everybody's Eberle, you know, there's a singer named Eberle. And
I guess Dracula was just an old name, too.
Yeah, I don't know how that came about, why he used that in the book.
So is Frankenstein, right?
Yeah.
It's wonderful how those names can take on.
They had a wonderful show in New York called Frankenstein that didn't last very long, but it was a wonderful and great effects. And it died in about 2 days, but it was a shame because they said the story was no good. Well, the story, everybody knows the story. But to look at it with the visually, it was wonderful. Oh, they had a laboratory scene that was colossal right up on the stage.
Have you seen the Count Floyd Monster Horror Chiller Theater sequences on Second City TV?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Oh, fine. I love that stuff. Oh, sure. And they had me do my little act on Saturday Night Live there a couple weeks back. And I don't know how or why, because they have their own acting company, but it turns out that the people who are running those shows now used to be like yourself. They were kids in New York, and they remember this stuff, and for some reason or other, they said, let's use him. So it was great fun to do it. Everybody cheered and hollered. Makes you feel good.
The Count Floyd thing is really, I think, a spoof of all the third-rate hosts of horror shows where people were trying to be you or someone like you, but couldn't pull it off at all. And we're just kind of like sleazy and maybe even a little lecherous looking, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, for years here now, we had Dr. Shock in town here who followed me after out of town. And he unfortunately died about a year or so ago before his time. That's too bad to die before your time, really is. That's sad. But anyway, I don't know whether I'll be doing this again or not. It just could be, I suppose. I kind of shy away from trying to bring something back. It's like you're trying to be revived or something. But it's all happened without any of my doing. It just out of the blue. Little girl about your age, your size at WOR in New York. They were sitting around a table and they said, who's going to introduce the 3D movie? And she said, how about Zacherle? He came to Queens College one. He's still around. And that's how I happened to go there. And since then, all these other little things have been popping up.
You've produced some records too, haven't you?
Oh, boy. Oh, yes.
Who have you produced?
I was on an Electro. No, I didn't produce any records, but I made some records. I made a record for Elektra and then Cameo Parkway here in Philadelphia where Chubby Checker and all those people used to hang out with Chubby Checker, use his singers in the same little studio. The studio was no bigger than this, and they made all those hits, the Orlans and Chubby Checker and the Dovells and all those folks. Gosh. And me.
You go to Dinner with Drac?
Dinner with Drac. I used to read spooky limericks as an opening in the show when I came down the stairway here in Philadelphia. It had a wonderful winding stairway. It looked like I was coming down into a dungeon. I'd come down and say, oh, good evening there. This tonight's poem is sent in by so-and-so. On. Dinner was served for three, Dracula's house by the sea. I choked on my wine. How was it? Something my wine. I said, I forget it. But I choked on my wine when I found that the main course was me. That was it. And the fellow who ran the record company used to sit and watch the show with his little daughter. And he got the idea, gee, he can recite and we'll put some music behind it and make a novelty record. And it caught on right away. And was the big star there. Went to Dick Clark show and all those things. Went to New York. Oh, the big time.
How did you develop your voice for the Zacherle Roland role?
I don't know. I'm watching that film that I mentioned a while ago that was 25 years old. I don't do that anymore. I guess I better look at that whole film because I was introducing Dracula, the film, and I saw myself the other night on TV, that little piece they did, and I'm saying, Dracula here, my voice is way down here, and my old friend Dracula. I was really laying it on heavy. And I remember myself saying, and I hope you pay attention, you might learn a thing or two. You know, real, ah. And I don't remember, I must have lost that somewhere along the line. Mostly I just say, you know, I read things and talk like this, really, and ha, 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 with a little laugh there. People always ask me to laugh, gosh. I always laugh like that.
Did you really?
Yeah, I think so. I guess. I don't know. Maybe I guess I exaggerated a bit to make it a trademark. But it comes out just naturally in conversations. And if people are standing around who haven't heard it for a while, they say, yeah, that's the laugh.
So what kind of movies do you watch in your civilian time?
Oh, I like a lot. I like documentary stuff. I love documentaries. I love that nature thing that's on from the Andes. Did you see that one? Oh, boy, that was wonderful on PBS. Is this PBS around here, this building here, more or less?
Yeah, we're a sister station of the public television station.
Sure,
we're public radio.
So, yeah. And films. Well, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to tell what I like in the way of films. I went to see the Pink Floyd film, The Wall. Did you see that?
Oh.
Boy, that's a heavy film. Gets pretty...
Heavy good or heavy bad?
Well, it gets more and more serious. And when it started out, everyone in the audience was cheering as the titles came on and they recognized the first tune and the visuals were good. Teacher, leave the kids alone, know that tune and all. And then it got into another thing and the lead in the movie, he gets very depressed. He's a rock star and he gets into drugs and all and he goes down, down, down. And his self-esteem and his view of life and everything else. And at one point he's decided he's going to end it all and he's slicing himself kind of carelessly with a razor. And everybody's sitting in the theater watching this, you know. And they cut away to a shot of a bathtub, much like the Psycho film, the bottom of the bathtub that's filled with about 2 inches of water and a lot of soapy bubbles on top. And you see they're obviously dropping some vegetable, red vegetable coloring on it, you know, little drops. But you get this awful feeling. And somebody in the balcony called out, "Get a job!" Desperation. And the whole theater fell apart. But that was the last laugh in the whole evening. It went from there. It got more and more depressing. It was such a wonderful thing to say. Don't kill yourself. Get a job.
Do you think you'll be doing TV again?
Well, it just may happen. Yeah, I was out visiting old Philadelphia's old friend Dick Clark. He was around town here not long ago doing some stuff, I guess. And he said he's interested in finding some old films and putting the whole thing on tape and doing it all over again. Because he was here when I was here, and he remembers all this craziness. And, of course, I met him in New York a few times also. And he's a bi-coastal person, if there ever was one. Boy, he must spend half his life on a plane. He really does. Back and forth. And he was on the Today Show or something the other day, and I was talking to his office, and he just arrived back home that moment almost, just back and forth like a everyday thing, you know. Amazing.
So what kind of music do you listen to at home now?
I still listen to rock music. I like it. Really, I'm amazed that it hasn't changed. There seems to be no, even though there's new wave now, so-called, it hasn't really captured a big audience yet, and there's still the same rock people that were around 15, 20 years ago almost, it seems like, are still playing, but whether they are or not, the basically same kind of electronic rock music is still coming out of the speakers, and there hasn't been the big change that there was from the 50s, between the 50s and the 60s, or from big band into the 50s. Big band music is still around if you go to a dance, you know, a country club or something, but basically, you don't hear it much on TV. It was what I call Las Vegas kind of music, you know, with a big orchestra and trumpets and all. But nothing has really separated the 60s generation and the 70s. It's still going on, and now we're in the 80s, and it still sounds like the same kind of music. They seem to have milked all the different electronic gimmicks that could be had out of all those Moogs and synthesizers and all those things that are going on. I don't know.
Would you want to be a DJ again?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do that this week. We're going to have a little old reunion up there at WNEW. All the people who were there in the very beginning, Roscoe and Allison Steele and Jonathan and Scott Muley and myself, and we all doing 3 hours of antique music from the mid-60s. You know, it'll be fun. Sure, any favorites you want to hear?
We are thinking back about how NEW kind of epitomizes some of the best and worst aspects of that kind of progressive rock radio of the period.
Yeah.
I used to really enjoy you on the air, but I remember some of the disc jockeys would just go on and on and on at length, like reading.
Oh yeah,
Roscoe
used like
reading.
Yes, Roscoe had readings. Yes, he did. He did. He loved that. He's good. He had a great voice. But he's one of the biggest guys in town now.
What's
because
he doing?
He's on WKTU, the disco station. Which in overnight, what was that, one famous month in New York, the man came in and took all the records and threw them out and said, "Here, play these." And what he handed the disc jockey was a stack of disco records. And they changed the station just like that. And it went to the top and beat WABC, the one that had been king in New York for so many years. And then ABC had to give up eventually. They've given up and gone to talk radio. And they're not doing all that well. You know, they've never been able to recapture the audience. And that station covered the whole East Coast at night. You could hear it all up and down the East Coast. Amazing.
Yeah.
So he's working there, and he's wonderful. Paco is ahead of him, and then comes Roscoe. And he's just doing terrifically. I don't know how he got the permission to come over and do—maybe he didn't, but they said they were going to try and get him to do it, to this little two-hour retrospective.
Well, happy anniversary.
Oh, have a good party. It's going to be wonderful.
I look forward to seeing you on TV in one image or another.
Well, Peter Neer was another one. He's a guy who's all around. He was up in North Dakota. I don't want anybody to go to North Dakota. But, excuse me, North Dakota. But anyway, he was up there doing a concert, and then I think he went somewhere else. Now he's in California. Now he's going to fly back here and get this concert together. And I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be an experience, really.
And you'll be reading The Raven?
Oh, The Raven, yes. Boy. Quoth that Raven, nevermore. I was down at Poe's house here doing, you know, posing in front of The Raven. Have you ever been down there? That's lovely. Not far from here.
Yeah.
Right up there, actually, up 7th Street.
So that'll be Sunday, Halloween Day at 3 o'clock, and then Monday, the day after Halloween, at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, and there are seats available. It's a concert series, but there are seats available in the upper regions, you know, not all the way up, but partway up for both days. I think Sunday is more crowded than others, but it's worth trying, folks. It's going to be an experience. I'll be looking for you.
Have a great performance.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, bite you on the neck.